Welcome to Alumni Live, the podcast. These are conversations with Grand Valley State University film and video graduates about the industry, the film video major, and alumni profiles. Welcome to the Alumni Live podcast. Holly, it's good to see you again. What are you doing out in Colorado? How are you using your film degree?
I graduated from Grand Valley in April of 2020, and it was honestly always my goal to move off to Los Angeles. So I was doing a lot of networking in that COVID year to get me to go to LA. But then I just sort of happened to fall in here in Colorado because I had a friend down here at the time, and I just kind of wanted to experience something different than Michigan. I am a producer's and a creative director's assistant at Lockheed Martin Space. And then I'm also an assistant to a documentary producer. And those jobs are both hybrid, which is nice. But before that, I also did a lot of like production assistant work when I first got down here before I got these more office-based jobs.
Give me the elevator pitch for what each of those positions are and what skills those have.
I do a lot of like the booking of the travel for the talent, get everything all organized. And I help a lot with release forms from all of our talent and a lot of like post-production work also in terms of like finding footage, getting everything cleared. We are working on a documentary right now focusing around meditation, which is kind of cool. And I do go into the office sometimes, which is exciting. So I get to sometimes help out on shoots and help with all of that sort of shoot stuff. And then I also have been working on this video digitization project for them where they have a lot of old footage of really cool stuff on 16 millimeter film, and also just assisting the producers in like their daily responsibilities to help promote essentially satellites for space, which is really fun, which also includes finding footage, getting release forms, organizing everything. So a lot of like organizational skills.
So at Grand Valley, were you pretty organized, or is that stuff you had to learn on the job out there?
And I was involved in like a lot of extracurriculars at Grand Valley. So definitely trying to juggle all those extracurriculars and keeping even just like in classes, you know, just keeping everything organized. I think it was a skill that I've definitely learned at Grand Valley and have been able to build on post-graduation.
That's really something that I learned from Grand Valley too, is color coding helped me a lot. There were some great professors that helped me through that in my own life. Especially working through those 16 millimeter films at Lockheed Martin, you must have uncovered some like cool stuff. Like, what are some discoveries you've made in your job?
It's so cool. I don't know how much I can say, but
we're talking top secret stuff here?
No, it's not super top secret, actually. This is all pretty public knowledge. But Lockheed Martin has helped build a lot of satellites to every planet in our solar system, including the sun, through NASA, basically. So NASA essentially hires Lockheed Martin to help build spacecraft. So we have footage of satellite launches going back to the 50s, you know? So like, I think Galileo is the name of a spacecraft, I think went to Jupiter. So we have launch footage of Galileo, and we have sort of like promotional footage from like the 80s and 90s talking about like the Hubble Space Telescope and talking about the International Space Station, like for his launch, because Lockheed had a part in helping NASA build all that. NASA is about to launch Artemis, which is a rocket that's going to go to the moon to help us, you know, go to the moon and eventually Mars again. And Lockheed Martin built Orion, which is the satellite on top of Artemis that's going to be doing all the survey stuff. So it's been really fascinating for me to go back to this old footage from the 70s, 80s, 90s, when it was only just a theory.
That is so cool. I love all that. But of course, B-roll is only, you know, part of what you do. I assume there's collecting A-roll, right? So are you doing interviews, things, you know, storytelling in that way?
So that's not my main job necessarily. I'm definitely more like behind the scenes. When I have gone to sets, I've been able to help like set up the camera and do stuff like that. But that's not my main job. We have specific cinematographers that do more like the interview and stuff. And like the main producers normally do that.
Are informational interviews at all part of what you do?
At Lockheed Martin, no. Mm. But it is how I got the job.
Okay. Do you want to talk a little bit about networking and, you know, even doing that in the pandemic, how you were able to create these really strong networks that brought you into where you are now?
So the week before the pandemic hit, actually, I went on the film and video Los Angeles trip where we went to LA and we got to visit with a lot of alumni. And that was phenomenal. It was like 4 days later when the pandemic hit and everything shut down. But when the pandemic hit, I started then networking, starting off with all of the alumni that we met in LA. So I would email them and I was like, you know, like, hey, we met you a couple weeks ago. How has the industry changed the past like 3 weeks that the pandemic has happened? So that was sort of like my first initial informational interviewing. And then after that, I just sort of stayed in contact with them because I still want to move to LA. How can I make these steps to move to LA when COVID's happening and I'm not sure what's going to happen next? So in April 2020, I then graduated. And then I then spent the next 9 months, basically until I moved to Colorado, doing so many informational interviews because I really wanted to go to LA. So I started with Grand Valley alumni, and then I sort of broadened my reach. I was reaching out to people that I found on LinkedIn, or like I went through the alumni book that we had at the time. And I remember going through that and finding people that I was really interested in and then reaching out to them from there. And I'd ask a professor at Grand Valley, be like, hey, do you know this person? Can you connect me with them? Or I would just find their website. Cause luckily in our industry, a lot of people have their own website. So it's super easy to just go online, find a contact form, send them like a quick email and ask if they can talk to you for 20 minutes. So I was just kind of looking to connect with people everywhere. And another part of it was I didn't really know what direction I wanted to go in. I wanted to be more of an editor, more of a cinematographer, more of a producer. So a lot of the informational interviews in that year was to give me a broader idea of what I personally was looking for. And it became really beneficial because then by the time I moved down to Colorado, I was kind of a pro at informational interviews. I was a lot more comfortable reaching out and asking questions and essentially asking for a job, which is how I kind of got to my positions today.
So that is a tool to get into the positions you're looking for. That is really cool. So you're finding people and saying, hey, I almost want to interview you about your job. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
I definitely think the point of an informational interview is sort of to understand what people do in their jobs. You're interviewing them because they know that like you're looking for a job too. But people just really like to help people. So it's really just all about like, hey, like, what do you do? You know, how did you get to where you're at?
So throughout those interviews, were there things that you learned that you didn't know about as you were trying to figure out what you wanted to do?
It's so funny because after graduation, even I'm still learning stuff about the industry. Definitely in college, we're not given the full scope. And it's partially because you can't. When you're in classes, you do have to like distill it down to like fully comprehend it. I feel like there's a million titles that go under the term that we call in college producer, you know, like a line producer, production manager, associate producer, a supervising producer, an executive producer. There's so many titles that go under what we call producer in college. So I learned a lot about that in my year. And that was sort of how I decided to kind of go down this more producing route that I'm sort of on now.
So do you feel like you're really clicking with it? Does it feel like the Holly job?
Being a producer?
Yeah.
I mean, it's what I'm doing right now and I do enjoy it. So I would say it is something that I am good pursuing for now.
And it sounds like, too, that these interviews, you're not just like out there going to get the job. You're also trying to build that relationship. Is that right?
You don't know who will hire you, you know, and that's why you have to keep on doing it. So when I do an information interview, I always try to focus on like three main questions. One, I try to always ask them a question, you know, about what their job looks like. And that gives me like a greater understanding of what they do for my own personal knowledge. Anyway, but then I also try to ask like how they got to where they're at, because everyone in the film industry has such different stories. And I've met so many people also that didn't even like major in film, but now they're a producer and now they're an editor. So it's always fascinating to see how they got to where they're at today. And it did help me, like me, you know, like be like, okay, Holly, like it's okay if you're not a producer by next week. Like, you know, like you have time, you can work through it. So I always ask what they do, how they got to where they're at, and then what advice they have for me also. Because if I wanted to get to a job that's like them in their position one day, what can I start doing now to sort of help me get up there, basically. So that's sort of what I focus on. And it does help because even though they're probably not going to hire you, they might, but it always does give you like a greater knowledge of just sort of like how the world works. And it helps you sort of define the route that you want to go. And especially when you ask them, what advice do they have for you? They're not giving you a job, but they're giving you a really key piece of how to get a job, which is so important. When professionals in the industry are like, maybe you should create a website, maybe you should create a demo reel, and you then do that, that means that it works, that they found, and that would give them a greater chance of being hired one day.
And I'd imagine too, if you know, look out, you know, 15, 20 years from right now, those same people that you have done these informational interviews, they might, you know, be contacts, or you might even call them friends that could help you out, you know, later, you know, that network becoming almost a safety net.
Yes, exactly. Especially like career shifts, you know, if you're going down this producing route and you're like, actually, I want to be an editor, it's always good to maintain those contacts for the people in all across the industry.
And so to keep that network going, how do you follow up with them? You know, outside of that one interview, do you keep it going?
Yeah, I keep this spreadsheet basically of all the informational interviews that I've ever done, which is nice. With that spreadsheet, I always put like their name, their email or phone number, whatever contact info I use for them. What they do and where they work is really important too. And then some key things that like stood out to me in the interview afterwards, I'll always have like a couple bullet points that way I can like mention it if I ever follow up with them again. And then I also always write down that spreadsheet to keep track the date that I talked with them. That way I know when to follow up basically. So if I talk to somebody in January, I normally like to wait 6 months. I think every 6 months is a good amount of time to follow up with the person. You don't want to wait like too long because then they might forget about you. But I would say like every 6 months-ish, follow up with them, or like every other month, I would say at the most normally works for me. And I like having that spreadsheet so that way I can just go back and I can be like, okay, I talked to this person 5 months ago. It's about the time when I should maybe email them again to follow up. And that's how I actually got one of my jobs with the documentary producer right now. Is I talked to her just as a cold outreach in June of 2020, I think it was. And then when I moved to Colorado, I remembered that she lived in Colorado conveniently. And I emailed her a year after. So it was June of 2021. And I did not follow up with her at all in that year, which I don't recommend. I recommend following up every 6 months. But I didn't follow up with her for a year. But when I did come down to Colorado, I was like, hey, I talked to you like a year ago. Can we meet up for coffee? I'm now in Denver. And she said, sure. And then she ended up basically offering me a job with her company, which was super exciting. So it's the long game, I guess you could say, with informational interviews. When you talk to somebody for the first time, they may or may not have a job or an internship for you. Maintaining those relationships is so important, and especially in the post-graduation world. When you're looking for a job, they might not have a project for you to work on right now, but you want to stay in contact with them. You still kind of want to be in like the right space at the right time sort of thing. So you got to kind of keep at the top of their mind. That way, when something comes up, you'll be right there.
Totally. So I co-own a media company. And when we need to, you know, staff up for a project or something like that, you know, we don't cold call somebody. You know, we're just thinking in our heads, oh, that person we had coffee with, you know, 2 weeks ago, she should come on and, you know, do something. So like, we're always, you know, thinking about, you know, who's just fresh in our minds because we just need to staff things up quickly. So I think that from the production company side, what you're doing is brilliant. That is such a good way to make sure you're on those projects.
Yeah, because you always want to be right there. Yeah.
Now, it sounds like to me like you're a pretty outgoing person. Do you have any tips for those of us who might be introverted or have anxiety about, you know, cold calling somebody or, you know, what if they don't like me? You know, do you have any advice about that?
I like to try to act extrovert on things like this, but I am 100% totally an introvert. And it was really hard for me to do my first couple informational interviews. So I think I did my first ever informational interview when I was like a sophomore in college. It was through a class I took or whatever. But then I really started doing it, obviously, like senior year of college. But it was really hard at first because I was like, what do I say? Basically, how do I talk to this professional? You know, it's like, how do I do that? So what I did at first was a lot of just simple anxiety techniques, just breathing and stuff like that. But I always did prepare beforehand, which I think is really important to always prepare before an informational interview. So earlier on, I would just Google informational interview questions, and there's a ton out there. So I'd go through and I'd copy the ones that really sort of spoke to me or that I really want to learn about this person I'm about to talk to. And so I would copy and paste those questions and I would put them on a document and I would like highlight the ones that I especially really wanted to ask. And then it was probably about when I first started, it was an hour before the informational interview, I'd go and look at my spreadsheet, sort of remind myself. I would always write like a little blurb about myself to help me prepare. Earlier on when I was on the spot, I could not think of words or how to form a sentence. So it always really helped me to put like bullets on a piece of paper about what I wanted to say about me. So I would always start off just making a little elevator pitch essentially on a piece of paper about me. And then I would have the questions that I really wanted to ask them. And it was just, you kind of just got to do it.
Yeah.
That's really all there is to it. Like you can prepare, but the more you do it, the more comfortable you get. And I think what's really great about informational interviews is that people really like to talk about themselves, you find very quickly. And luckily for an informational interview, it's just you and one other person. Nobody else is listening in. So that helped my anxiety a lot with me remembering like it's just this one person. And even though they're like really successful, they are just a person and they want to help me and they like to talk about themselves. So literally whenever you feel anxious, just ask them a question about them and then it just gets them talking and then you just kind of warm up to it.
I'm going to ask you maybe to put you on the spot for a second, but could you maybe give us that elevator pitch about yourself or, you know, just an example of what you might say to somebody?
Yeah. So I'll do one that I used when I was first graduating because obviously your elevator pitch will change over time. And so what I'm doing today is different than what I did when I graduated. But during that year, when I was graduating, I would basically say like, hi, my name's Holly. I'm a recent graduate from Grand Valley State University in Michigan. And I always say in Michigan, because if they're outside of Michigan, they might not know where that's at. I studied film and video, and I had a minor in advertising. And I'm talking with you today because I saw you're a producer on this film that I really liked. And that's something that I'm really interested in learning more about. I hope I can one day be in your position. And I'm kind of interested in learning about your career path and how you got to where you're at today. And so that's just sort of what I hope to talk with you today. And hopefully you can share any advice with me. Yeah, that was a rough one. I haven't done that in a while. But that's basically what I would say is just introducing myself, where I'm from, what I'm interested in, why I'm contacting them, and what I hope to get out of the conversation. And just basically, I would say that in a short little summary.
So I also want to ask, if you don't mind shifting gears for a second, a little bit more about your position as a producer's assistant for your documentary company.
Yeah.
What is that like? I mean, we talked a little bit about the Lockheed Martin stuff. What kind of stories are you uncovering there? What do you bring into the screen?
Yeah. Oof, again, I don't know how much I'm allowed to share, but I can share some things.
Top secret again?
It's just that we're in production of a lot of things right now. So we've worked on 3 documentaries this past year, which I guess is a lot
for
a documentary film. And one of them came out in June 2022, and that focused on this, it's called The Black Knight Satellite, Beyond the Signal, and it was for this online streaming service, basically. It's about the Black Knight Satellite, which is this alien conspiracy theory.
Oh, so, tell me about it.
They think there's a spaceship sending signals to Earth that has been detected for a while. I'm not sure how I feel about it personally. It was definitely fascinating to sort of work on that and interview, you know, people who have evidence of this alien conspiracy, so that's pretty cool. And then we're focusing one about meditation right now, which I don't think I get to talk a lot about too much about that one, but meditation is super interesting. We're taking sort of a different approach to it. So I'm super excited for that one to come out. And then we're also focusing on one right now about essentially codes that are in the universe, like hidden codes that we've found in patterns and stuff.
Right.
So it's all about sort of unlocking the earth and sort of expanding consciousness is sort of what we say in our documentary studio.
So what does a day in the office look like for you or at home, or you said you were hybrid?
So for that job, I am mostly virtual. So I'm only part-time with that, which is how I can balance that one and Lockheed Martin. But it's a lot of different stuff. I mean, recently I've been transcribing the interviews and sort of separating parts of the interview into different themes that I then put into different folders. So that way our executive producer who's writing the script can then go in and find the themes that she wants to focus on and write the script, basically. We are a pretty small team. There's only 3 of us on this production studio, and then we hire in other people for shoots, obviously. But I talk with the executive producer in the production manner, and we have a lot of communication going out, you know, to create the call sheets and a lot of just organizational stuff for the studio since we are still trying to grow it a little bit.
We're taking a short break to tell you about the Chuck Peterson Memorial Fellowship. The fellowship was established by Chuck Peterson's family and friends to assist the upper-level students in the film and video program at GVSU who are working on creative projects that support the nonprofit sector in their community. Kyle Machime, the 2020 recipient of that fellowship, describes the benefits of the support he received.
When going through this fellowship, there are 3 separate parts of yourself that I think get to experience a lot of development. The first is as a student, because this is a learning process. You get to learn how to work with the client on your own, independently out in the world, away from the classroom like you would in something like producing for clients. And the second one would be as a video maker, as a video producer, as someone who has respect for the work that they're doing and wants to improve on themselves and produce a final product that can be used out in the real world. And then the third one would be as a citizen. You know, you're not making video for an entertainment value or for some kind of commercial purpose. It's for a nonprofit. It's for a direct benefit in your community. And being a citizen of that community, understanding how you can directly impact and improve it is a really valuable experience that I think the fellowship teaches you to be as a student, as a filmmaker, and as a citizen. All 3 of those things are directly a part of this process that you get to learn and ask yourself, how do I want to be seen and how do I want to act as these 3 roles?
For more information and to donate to the scholarship, visit the link in the description. Now back to the show. All right. So Holly, you're talking about, you know, all these people you've reached out to, people you've made connections with. How do you even start that process? Where do you find these professionals?
I started off a lot with just Grand Valley alumni. So like I mentioned, like going through the alumni book was a really great start. When I went to LA, finding people like that. But then also asking your professors, and they don't have to be film professors. When you have sort of like a goal in mind, and even if your goal is just moving to another state, really asking anyone that you know in that other state is beneficial. So when I thought I was going to go to LA, I asked my advertising professor, hey, Do you know anybody in LA? Even if they're not in the film industry, are they in like the creative advertising field, you know, that I can talk to? So just sort of looking at things like that and asking a lot of people around. But then one thing that I also found really effective when I first decided I was going to stay here in Colorado was I was looking at Facebook groups that people use. So I'm part of several, you know, like Women in Film Denver groups, you know, or like, you know, Filmmaking Denver groups. And I remember just posting on those Facebook groups. I was like, hi, I just moved here. I'm interested in documentary filmmaking. I'm interested in producing. Would anybody on here be willing to do an informational interview with me? And then people would then respond to my Facebook post in that group and be like, sure, I'll talk with you. You know, send me a direct message or whatever. So then that's another way that I just met people, you know, in the area. So Facebook groups. But then also, you can also look at shows that you like and reach out to people. It's sort of 50-50 on if they'll get back to you or not. But that's sort of how I found the documentary producer that I'm working with right now. Was I was watching a show that she had on a streaming platform, and then I just sort of looked at the credits on the show and I just saw she was a woman producer. So then I reached out to her on LinkedIn, and now I work with her several years later. Just finding people on LinkedIn and kind of just looking for opportunities everywhere to connect with people has been really effective. I guess I'll mention this too. So I also have a general email template that I use when I send to people. And basically what I say in the email, if it's a cold reach out, is I really mention why particularly I'm reaching out to them. So with the documentary producer that I just cold reached out to, so I'm a recent graduate from Grand Valley studying film. I'm interested in documentary and in producing. I'm reaching out to you today because I really liked this show that you made. Here are some specific things in that show that stood out to me, or some specific things from your website that stood out to me. This is why I would really love to learn from you. Can you talk more? And if it's like a connection where somebody else connected me with them, I always try to mention within the first sentence or two why I'm reaching out to them in particular. I got your contact information from so-and-so, you know? That way they sort of know who you are. And I feel like it gives you a little more credibility when they know why in particular you're reaching out to them. So in my informational interviews, and when reaching out to people, that's something I always try to do.
Okay. When you say it's like, you know, 50-50, whether they get back to you, have you had any people respond negatively to you reaching out? And how did you handle that if they did?
I honestly don't think anybody will ever say no. They just won't respond. I did, in my COVID year, I guess you could say, I did over 30 informational interviews and nobody ever told me no. I would say I probably sent out like 40 emails and probably 30 of them ended up talking with me. And a lot of them were through connections. So maybe that's also why nobody ever said no, is because if somebody else connected me with them, they would always, you know, do like the preliminary, hey, can you talk to this person? Wow. But for cold reach outs, I really don't think anyone will ever say no, because people want to help. And again, if they're too busy or they don't want to and they don't know you, I think they're just not going to respond. That sort of does help me too with like getting the fear away. If it's like, if they don't want to talk to me, I feel like they just wouldn't respond.
Yeah. Yeah. When you do ask, do you ask for a certain amount of time to hang out? You know, do you say let's meet for an hour, or how do you approach their busy schedules?
So it really does depend. I found that Grand Valley alumni are always so willing to talk for a long time, and easily with alumni, our conversations will go to like 40 minutes to an hour easily, which seems like a long time, but it's really not. Like when you get into it, it's really not that long. But when it's a cold reach out, I always say like even just 15 minutes of your time would be really beneficial. So I would say for a cold reach out, yeah, definitely aim for 15, 20 minutes. And something that I do when it is a cold reach out and they respond and I feel like they're doing me a favor talking to me when they have no connection to me, is I do always try to start off the informational interview. I give them my little elevator speech, and then I say, I really want to be respectful of your time. How much time do you have? And a lot of times they'll be like half an hour. Like that's generally the amount of time that they have. But if they do say longer, then great. But it just helps to give you an idea too. I would say definitely aim for half an hour. And then if it goes longer and they seem willing, great. But if they have something somewhere to be, definitely try to keep it short. And I think one thing that I do to help make sure that our conversations stay short is when I make my list of interview questions that I want to ask them, I always try to highlight 5 questions that I definitely want to ask. So if it's cold reach out and I have a list of like 20 questions because I want to talk to them all day, you know, but I can't.
Right.
I highlight 5 that I really, really, really want to ask them about. And I make my way through those five first and then see where we're at time-wise. Because if you're at 20 minutes and it's a cold reach out and you've gone through your five, it might be time to wrap it up. And that's when you can be like, should we end it? But that really helps me to make sure that I always get what I want out of it.
Right. Yeah, that's super important. And beforehand, you know, doing that research, looking at LinkedIn, you know, things like that. How deep do you go before the interview?
Yeah. You can really go as deep as you want, honestly. I always definitely look at their LinkedIn and look at their website. I do try to get as much information as I can beforehand, because if I look at their IMDb or their LinkedIn and I see the jobs they went through, then on the informational interview, I'm not focusing on the jobs they've had. More so, I'm focusing on what they're saying on how they went from ABC, you know? So it's what you're not going to find on LinkedIn necessarily, what you're going to learn from them. So it's good to sort of ask those. And also, then this is a good interview tip too. If you ever have an interview with an actual person and you can LinkedIn them beforehand, seeing sort of their path beforehand, and then you can ask more specific questions too, because you're like, oh, I saw that you worked at Disney for 2 years and then I saw you went to Universal. What was the difference between the two? How was that transition? Which do you like better? You can ask that if you want. But being able to ask specifics like that, I think is really, really great.
I feel like, you know, one of the laws of our industry is that, you know, people always say it's who you know. And it seems like you are taking that and making that into a strategy almost. Like you're learning, you know, it's who you know. You're getting to know more people. I think that's a great way to break the code.
It's all who you know. It's all who you know, which is good, actually. It's good once you learn how to make it good. It'll seem intimidating at first, though. So I definitely understand that. But I feel like, yeah, once you sort of crack the code, it's easy to just sort of run with it.
So Holly, all of this informational interview stuff, I'm learning a ton. I assume that you didn't invent informational interviews. How did you come to figure out about it and how did you learn about it?
I would say YouTube is where I learned a lot of my early informational interview skills. But then when I started looking into it myself, I would just Google it and YouTube it. And there's so many good YouTube channels out there that are focused around career. I'll go to TikTok or YouTube and just watch videos. And on those videos, they basically tell you everything that I just said, but in their sort of career professional way, which is always beneficial to have another perspective. And then they'll also normally share good questions to ask too. And that's how I look at a lot of my informational interview questions that I have on my list, is just going through the YouTube videos and TikTok videos and pulling stuff from those.
I wrote down as you were talking that balance. You talked about, you know, balance. You got, you know, two jobs, you know, you're doing three documentaries with one job a year. How do you achieve that balance? How do you make sure you have time to still be Holly?
That's a great question. So actually, it was really hard at the beginning of this year because I started working at Lockheed in January of this year, and I started working with this producer in October of last year, so October 2021. And so in January, it was difficult because I was working 40 hours with Lockheed Martin, and I was working easily 15 to 20 hours with this documentary producer, and I got burnt out like really quickly. It was like February and March was like really rough for me, actually, in terms of trying to balance both those jobs. So, and I was so grateful for both of them. Like, they're both such cool stuff that I didn't want to drop either of them, and I needed both of them. But it was a lot of actually working with the executive producer and the documentary and working with Lockheed Martin to be like, hey, is there a way for me to lessen my hours? Or how can I find this work-life balance? Not that we don't have any boundaries when you're in college, but you kind of don't, because you kind of have an assignment that has to get done. And so it is different in the work world. When do you just work during 9 to 5, Monday through Friday? Or does your work bleed into after 5 p.m.? Does it bleed into the weekends? Like, sort of, where do you find that balance? And so for me personally, what I found useful was talking with my managers at both the jobs, lessen my hours, find a good balance between both of them. But then also always, you know, self-care is just so important. I go for a lot of bike rides. And obviously we live in Colorado, so it's gorgeous here. And I love to go for hikes in the mountains every weekend that I possibly can. And just finding the self-care and also the appreciation for what you are doing and working with others around you to make it work.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, just like anything, it takes practice, right? Being able to, you know, clear out that time for you. I certainly have had to practice that myself, making sure we have that. As we kind of, you know, start to wrap up here, is there advice that you have for the students out there that you've learned about informational interviews or getting to where you are?
Yeah. I think something that's really great about informational interviews is that when you ask them for advice, also, this is me giving advice for advice, but when you ask them for advice on what you should work on, working on that and then following up with them after the fact, you know? So like if you're talking with somebody at an informational interview and you're like, what podcasts should I listen to? What books should I read? What YouTube videos should I watch? What, you know, what should I work on if I want to be in your position one day, basically, is the question. And if they're like, oh, you know, you should listen to this podcast or you should read this book, or you should really work on your demo reel right now, then working on your demo reel or listening to that podcast and then following back up with them. And I think that's what's really important too, is not just like meeting them and then having the conversation with them, but how do you follow up? How do you stay in contact? So following up with them, always sending a thank you email, 100% always do that after the informational interviews and being like, hey, you know, I'm actually going to read this book that you recommended. And then a couple months later, when you do your 6-month follow-up or a 4-month follow-up or whatever, you can then be like, hey, you know, back in January, you told me to work on my demo reel. Now it's April. Here's my demo reel. Can you check it out? And that's really great because then they'll actually give you advice on how to improve your demo reel. And since it's several months later, and since you now have a finished product, if they're looking to hire somebody, they will now see your demo reel. So it's a really great way to give them what you can do without them asking for it, which I always find super effective.
You are, so you're unlocking the codes of the industry here, aren't you? Just like in your documentary. All right. So before we get to how students can contact you and stuff, I got one more big question for you. Can you tell me a big victory that you had in the course of your career, or a challenge that you solved, or, you know, something that you're really proud of, something that you achieved?
Wow. That's a big question. I feel like that's the mission of my life, is to solve those kinds of challenges. I would say recently, especially with my job at Lockheed Martin, is looking at all of this old interview footage, old satellite launch footage, all of this stuff that's on 16mm films, and just stuff that was recorded basically before the 2000s, essentially, being able to look at that. And it really makes me feel like that we're living in the future right now. Like, I know we still have a long way to go in terms of like video work and in terms of, you know, going to space and things like that. But it's been fascinating to sort of look back on that footage and be like, wow, we sort of are living in the future. Like, they can imagine, you know, going to Mars, you know, and now here we are trying to do that. And the same with technology too, just in terms of like recording and stuff. So a connection that I made recently there was that, even though that was all in the past, how does that relate to the future going forward? And it's just so cool, because also at Lockheed Martin, we've built satellites that have gone to every planet in the solar system, and a lot of them extend their lifetime that they were meant to. So Voyager 1 and 2 were meant to go explore Saturn and like the outer ends of the solar system. Voyager 1 and 2 are still exploring space. Like, they've been out there in space for 44 years, and it was only planned as a 4-year-long mission. So just thinking of things like that. And so I don't think I can say too much, but basically that's an idea, a thought that I had of connecting the past to the future that we're currently sort of discussing in our job, about how can we tie the past into the future, but also recognize that we are living into the future. So it's a recent thing we're still kind of working on, so I can't say too much, but that's sort of a recent observation that I had.
That's super cool. Yeah. Science fiction is becoming science reality. That's super amazing. As students are listening to this, if they want to ask you questions, is there a way they can get in touch with you?
Yeah. Email me. My email is hwtumbarello, T-U-M-B-A-R-E-L-L-O @gmail.com. And I would say that's probably the best way to email me or to contact me is probably through email.
If you get the opportunity through Lockheed Martin to go up to space, are you going?
When I first got hired, no. But after looking into it, it would be kind of cool. So, you know, maybe one day.
Maybe one day. All right. Well, thank you so much, Holly. This is great information. I learned a ton. Thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. Subscribe to our podcast to hear more from our alumni across the industry. Check out Alumni Live on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for more conversations and networking. Let us know what topics you want to hear our alumni talk about. The Grand Valley State University Film Video Alumni Network is here for you, and we're glad that you're here. Thank you for listening.